Good morning. It's really great to be here.
Wait and see. So I sincerely okay. hope that you will be delighted at the end of. Tim, just to mention again, and the audience is delighted, and I'm delighted even more, that you are here. You were ranked number one in Fortune's magazine 2015 list as the world's greatest leader. My goodness. Applause, I would say. Yes.
Thank you.
By the way, to get Tim even more modest, in 2014 he was Person of the Year of the Financial Times. But, well, now we are writing 2016 and you can be our hero today. As CEO, Tim has overseen incredible new Apple products and services. And now I have a question. Could you act what we discussed earlier on the technical service? I had the pleasure, Tim, and therefore I'm asking that first naughty question. I had the pleasure to take Tim last night to a very special event, so to say. And my question is, do you happen to know, Tim, where and when the iPhone was invented?
You know, I thought I knew until last night. And last night, Nellie took me over to look at some Rembrandts. And in one of the paintings, I was so shocked. There was an iPhone in one of the paintings. Oh, is it up there? It's tough to see, but I swear it's there.
Well, I have the proof. Huh?
He had great vision.
But can you imagine walking through that gallery, watching the night watch, that Tim is saying, hey, Nelly, look, that guy has already an iPhone. And I thought, is this the type of business? Okay. Tim, Apple has its origin in being a startup itself. Yeah. From that experience, the startup experience, what is Apple doing for startups in Europe? And what is Apple doing with startups?
Yeah, it's a good question. The most important thing that we do is provide the iOS platform and to provide the App Store. And of course, the App Store gives a young entrepreneur or an old entrepreneur the ability to sell their application instantly in 155 countries around the world. And reach some incredible customers. And so what we do is help support them. We provide both technical assistance, we give support in marketing, we give support in sales. So we try to clear the path so the entrepreneur can focus on their product. And because most young companies should, I think, be principally focused on their product. I think most companies overall should be, but certainly young companies. And so we do that with a lot of different support to further fuel new entrepreneurs and new developers. We focus on we've actually placed an app development center in Naples, and what we're trying to do there is to bring the app economy to places that it's missed, because we recognize that although any person in any city can write an app now, it hasn't gone everywhere yet, and we want it to very much, because there's nothing like turning millions of people and unlocking the creativity and the innovation of millions of people. I mean, I met some developers this morning and some yesterday, and the things they're working on are really awesome, really great.
Tim, the first row, the Minister of Economic Affairs, Henk Kamp, is joining. Right. And I'm certain that he would be delighted if you would start such a research institute for apps in the Netherlands. So just a sideline.
There's no better recruiter than that one.
Okay. I'm not certain if the Vice President of the European Commission, ANSIP, Andres, is already joining us. But, there will be a moment that we will meet together. But I was wondering, what are your ideas, Tim, what Europe should do for startups to encourage the startups and to foster their growth? And of course, considering how do you look at the European market for Apple products? But yeah. Let's first start with the question, what should Europe do?
It's a great question. This is probably, not probably, this is one of the, not the only, but one of the most important roles of government, I think. And I think high on the list, and it's sort of the expected at this point, is the rule of law and the certainty of law. This is very key, and Europe has always been great at this. What that means is that if you invest in something or you make some business decision, somebody later doesn't come back and say, oops, things are changing. And so Europe has always been really great at that, and I hope that Europe will always be great at that. The entrepreneurs need capital, and so the VC element is key. But I don't really see that being a limitation here. The most important thing, I think, there's an old Chinese proverb that says, if you want to prosper for a year, plant grain. If you want to prosper for 10 years, plant trees. If you want to prosper for 100 years, invest in people. And I've always believed that. And so what the people are the most important part of a company. And in any company, large or small, and you think about if you're a young entrepreneur in the Netherlands or in London or Berlin or wherever it might be, the thing that's fundamentally changed from being the shop owner on the corner is that now you are selling your product to the world. And so what does this mean? It means that you have to really understand a lot of cultural nuance that is far greater than you know the block or the city or the country that you live in. And so immigration becomes really important to that. And sort of having a country and government policies that embrace diversity, that embrace inclusion is extremely important. Having government policies that hold education at the highest level is very important, right? We fundamentally believe that coding is a language and that just like other languages are required in school, coding should be required in school, right? And we think that higher education should be very much linked to private business and to the venture capital, because a lot of the pipeline for young companies are right from the university. And so all of these things, if they're done right, provide this virtuous circle that you know grows jobs. We now have 1.5 million developers in Europe, 1.5 million jobs. There's more developers than that because many people work part-time and so forth. And so, and this of course creates other jobs in the service economy, et cetera. And so, you know, that's my view: is people are first, certainty and rule of law is the foundation that companies are built upon, and the influx of venture capital, and making sure policies of government incent or at least do not provide barriers to bringing in capital.
Tim, when you were mentioning your first phrase for Brussels, so to yeah. say, and I was thinking the Netherlands, the presidency of the European Union at the moment, and taking advantage of the Minister of Economic Affairs in our midst, that it is extremely important, and I repeat it yeah. in a one-liner, be predictable yes. as a European Commission/European Union, and don't change the rules during the game.
That's exactly right. But change the rules for the next game. That's okay. I mean, things change in the future. They shouldn't change in the past.
Well, the body language of the minister is giving me comfort. Tim, how do you look at the European market for your products? not only talking about today, but also about the future.
When I'm out in the countries, when I'm here, when I'm in Italy, when I'm in Ireland, when I'm in the UK, when I'm in Germany, I feel a vibrance that I haven't felt in a while. I feel an excitement. I feel that the future is much brighter than the past. I think that I feel an optimism that sort of escaped many countries over you know, since 2008 and all the crisis that all of us have gone through. And so I'm really encouraged. And so I'm encouraged for our products. I'm encouraged for Europe's economy. I think some things have to get out of the way, so to speak. But I sense a really great future, and I think Europe has something that many countries don't have, and that's that there's still such a love and appreciation for the liberal arts here. And as Apple, we have always felt that our role was to stand at the intersection of technology and the liberal arts, that that's where the real magic comes. Technology for technology's sake isn't really that great at the end of the day. You know, we get our pleasure out of a higher purpose of trying to lift humanity and trying to give people the power to create things that they couldn't do without the tools that we provide. And so that's what drives us and gets us really excited and so forth. And I feel, for the first time in a while over this last several months, there is this new fresh air blowing, and it feels great. It feels really great.
We are certainly very pleased with this recognition, for there is a change, and we badly need it, by the way.
Yeah.
Talking about Apple, and you were spearheaded the app revolution with the launch of the App Store in 2008. How do you think about the apps today?
Yeah, I think that to use a baseball analogy, which may not be totally applicable here, but I think it's in the early innings. And I think in consumer, there's long runway left, because if you think about some of society's biggest problems and challenges, one of the ones that we're really focused on is health. And arguably, the healthcare system can be made much simpler, can have much better results. You could have patients that really feel like customers and so forth, and have systems and applications that bring out the best in the medical professionals that are serving patients. And I think the runway there is enormous. I think the things around climate change and are just, you know, we big challenges, but big opportunities as well. And things like providing joy, whether it's games or whatever. I saw an app this morning that helps you, essentially it acts as a sort of biofeedback for your body and to take the stress out. And so I'm convinced there is an app that can do everything if we put our energy into it enough. I'd also point out that for those of you that work in enterprises, many of you do, I'm sure, the truth is that the enterprise revolution on apps hasn't begun in a huge way yet. And because when you look into many enterprises, what you would find is that people may be using their iPhone or hopefully not another smartphone, they might be using it for email, or they may be using it for browsing. But in terms of making people more productive and connecting the two, there's still so much more that can be done in enterprise. And so I feel like we're in sort of 2008 from an enterprise point of view. And so I see a lot of opportunity.
Sky is the limit?
The sky is the limit.
And when you were taking into account the open and the closed models, for that is also something special for Apple, what is your advice for there are quite a couple of developers in the audience?
You know, for a while, and some people still do, have called Apple closed, right? But here's kind of the way I look at that is, I think if we have 2 million apps on the App Store, and so that doesn't sound too closed. we do curate. We curate because we believe customers want to make sure that an app does what it says it does, that there are certain things we don't want to sell, like pornography and this kind of thing, and so we weed those out. I realize some people have a problem with that, but we do this, and we feel good about it because we want to protect kids and so forth. So I think the open closed is an old kind of myth at this point. The truth is, with either mobile operating system, there are tons of applications on them, and you can do a lot with both.
Okay, Tim, you made a big impression not that long ago in the Netherlands, for you have been outspoken on Apple's values and impact on society, and you did preach for it. A recent example for that is your Clear Stand Award towards the FBI about not one from outside can just have access to one's iPhone. Why is that so important for you? And again, we were pleased with that.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm glad you asked it, because I haven't talked about this very much since it happened. First of all, from a values point of view, I feel very strongly that companies should have values, that companies are made up for people, and a company should have a soul just like a person has a soul. And you know, each of us can't work on everything in the world, but Apple has, we've chosen to focus on the environment because we believe that climate change is a huge issue, and so we're working on that by the building the kind of products we do and making sure over time that we run Apple on 100% renewable energy. We're really proud of that. We work in education because we, as I mentioned before, we think education is really important. We work on human rights and diversity because we believe inclusion is essential to building the best products. And we believe in privacy. And we believe privacy is a fundamental human right. And so what happened here, and this is, I think, important for me to go through a little bit of the detail because some of it got lost, I think, is there was a terrible attack in San Bernardino in California, and there were multiple phones that were found. All had been crushed but one, and they were crushed by the shooters. The one phone that had not been crushed was an iPhone 5C, and so we were asked for information about this phone, and we passed all of the information we had on it. That was some cloud backup, it was some metadata, this kind of thing. Weeks afterwards, the FBI came to us and said, we want you to go further than that. We want you to create a new operating system, strip out the several security precautions that are and controls that are in it, and get additional information that you don't have on this phone. And we said, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that because there are certain things technology can do, but it should never be created. And we felt this was one of those because if this tool got out in the wild, and we're constantly under attack, as many of your companies probably are as well, if it got out in the wild, it could be used in really terrible ways. And this would have public safety implications, it would have data security implications. And so we refused. They didn't accept that, and they elected to sue us. And we were about to have the hearing, and the case was pulled. And but our view is pretty simple: is that we think our customers depend on us to help them protect themselves. That it's too complex today for all of us to understand the hacking community and what can happen. And so we think our customers depend on us for that. The only way we know how to protect people is to encrypt. Some of you may have come up with a better way, but we haven't. And we've been working at it for a long time. And so we do encrypt. We've encrypted iMessage, which I hope many of you use. We've encrypted that since we first came out with it. So it's been encrypted since 2008. FaceTime has been encrypted since 2008. The truth is, we don't view that we should know about your communications. We don't think we have a right to do that. We think if you send a message, we're more like the FedEx carrier, right? We take the message sealed and bring it over. And so that's our point of view, and it's not a new point of view. It's a point of view that we've had, and we've constantly added more and more security. And I realize that some people have a different view, but I hope the people that do at least understand where we're coming from.
Tim, a hobby horse from my side, and it's connected with my past in Brussels and my experience over there and my frustrations. A lot of people, as well in the US, as well in Europe, use your devices. What will it take for you to issue your own soft SIM and cut out the telcos?
You know, when you look at it, the network operators have a lot of expertise in building out their network, and you know, they have years of experience in it, which we don't have. And so, from the very
sometimes bad experience for the customer, yeah.
But from the very beginning, we looked at this and said, what we're really good at is the device. Because we understand hardware, we understand software and services and sort of the integration of those, but we don't, our expertise doesn't extend to the network. And so we, you know, worked with AT&T initially in the US, we worked with O2 in the UK, we worked with T-Mobile in Germany and Orange in France. And then later we expanded as we learned more and so forth. But generally, the things Apple really loves to do, we like to do things where we can do them globally. Because that's one of the things that we bring. And it's hard to imagine being able to be a global carrier because of everything. And in addition, we don't have the network skill. And so we'll do some things along the way with eSIM and so forth that will help make things simpler, but in terms of the carriers, I appreciate the things they do, and we'll leave it at that.
You are a diplomat. Still a little bit of hope, but you need eternal life. Yeah, I got it. Tim, the audience was asked to just put a couple of questions. What Constantine and Jim did decide that it would put together, and a couple of those questions would be put at the table, but I will just read the questions for efficiency. So it's your question, no doubt about that, but I will just take the floor and explain what is in the mind of the audience. Question, what will Apple look like in the next 5 to 10 years? And which next market is the most important one?
Yeah, this is a question that I always try not to answer. but let me sort of maybe I can illuminate some things. The things that interest us the most are things where we can bring our ability to integrate hardware, software, and services into something that's magical and enriches people in some way. And so right now, if you kind of look at some of the things we're doing that do not drive revenue, but they have massive interest in them from our teams, is health is very much one of those. And so we've done some things with the Apple Watch to monitor activity and to try to encourage people to stand more, move more, exercise more. But we've also gotten interested in research, and so we've launched Research Kit. And what Research Kit is essentially a framework whereby the old way of doing research, where if a company wanted to do research, they would put up on a bulletin board or a classify ad and say, I want people that look like this or have these kind of characteristics or whatever. Of course, everybody's carrying around a device in their pocket, and so you can have a much richer subjects and numbers and so forth if you do that. And so we've really started to pull that string. Research Kit led us to Care Kit, and we just launched Care Kit a while back, which really helps the doctor ensure that the patient is taking care of themselves post-operation. Although there's other things that can be done with it as well. And so the net of that is that we believe that health is something that is a huge problem in the world, a huge issue, and we think it is ripe for simplicity and sort of a new view. And we'd like to contribute to that. And so that's an area where we're very focused. We also believe in the entertainment realm that apps are the future of TV. And so we've launched our new Apple TV product, but it's clear to us as we pull that string that there's a lot left to do, and we'd like to be a catalyst in changing the world of entertainment there. And so we're continuing to work on that. And then, of course, we're working on some things that I don't want to really mention at all. But
but this is old-fashioned, so to say. Your watch is, well...
Yeah, yours is old-fashioned.
Yeah. I got
if,
it.
If I can... Yeah. You know, I love the watch. One day, this is my prediction, is one day you will look back and you will wonder, how could I ever have gone without the watch? Because the holy grail with the watch is being able to monitor more and more of what's going on in your body. It's not possible technologically to do it today to the degree that we can imagine it, but it will be. And so think about, for those of you that own a car, you get in your car, you crank it up, you drive for a while. If it gets a little too hot, a light comes on and says, you know, pull over or check out. If you need an oil change, it comes on and says, you know, check the oil. If it has all of these things in it that alert you that you need to do something. What is the equivalent for the body? Well, it's our minds, but our minds unfortunately convince all of us all too often not to seek help. And many times we don't even know there's no symptom. And so if you could have a device that knew so much about you, it would be pretty incredible and would extend life and extend quality. And I'm not saying one device will do all of that, but it, when you solve such a big problem, it takes several contributions. And so I think that's the way I feel here. Also, I'm not sure how many folks have an Apple Watch in the audience, but one thing that I love about it is it makes me more present. So I found myself all the time kind of checking my mail and checking my notifications, et cetera. This is a quick way, and you sort of stay present in the conversation, as well as I love to pay with it. And you know, control different things from the wrist. I know we can't pay just yet, but
I'm about to get the hook. Questions, and then I will be quick, and I'm certain that. What is your key message to the companies who want to stay on top of technology and on top of the market? For that is what.
Don't get full of yourself. Don't smoke your own exhaust. Don't worry about cannibalizing yourself. as a company grows, whether they're small or big, they begin to worry about having a new product because they worry that the new product will kill off an old product. And so they begin to compromise and compromise and compromise. And pretty soon somebody else has passed them. Or they get full of themselves and they worry more about whether their cufflinks are nice or whatever, or their office or something. And so I think being hungry, not being driven by money, but being driven by some higher purpose and building great products is really key. And not never do something strictly for money, right? Do it for love, do it for passion. That's what drives people and keeps people moving. It's not the green.
Normally spoken, this would be the best end, but I'm looking, this ego question still, yeah? For I imagine they paid for it. So no, I'm kidding. Or perhaps not. That would Zico question, and that is related to education and to software. And you touched upon already, Tim. How can we improve educational software to better support teachers? For quite often, the kids are highly interested, but the teacher is saying, "I'm not competent." Yes.
Yeah, I think we, first of all, the recognition of it is key, is that we shouldn't expect teachers to magically get up one day and be able to teach code or to move from an analog classroom to a digital. We need to invest in teacher development and treat them like their customers as well. And you know, teachers have some of the most important jobs in our society. And so I think we need to invest there. I do feel strongly that the curriculum needs to be relooked at. And I do think coding is as important, if not more important, as the second language that most people learn in today's world. And so what would I do? I would go in and make coding a requirement starting at the fourth or fifth grade. And I would build on that year after year after year, because if we do that, we will get more diversity in tech. We will have more people interested in tech. And because even if you go in medical or you go in environmental engineering, there is an intersection. You know, it's not like coding is this thing that is just done by certain people. It's that it's absorbing everything. And so I think we're doing our kids a disservice if we're not teaching them and introducing them in that way. That's what I would do.
Very Dutch, straightforward, and very rude. Could some of your Apple guys spend, for example, a Saturday morning to teach teachers in the Netherlands?
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely. We'd love to. Absolutely. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry to interrupt. Is this on? Yeah. There were two shout-outs by Tim Cook. And one of them is he mentioned a developer that he spoke to this morning that has an app that makes you happier. Is this person in the room? Could you stand up, please?
Woo!
There he is. Do I have 1 minute, please?
Yes.
Let's see. He's
run,
over
Jim,
here.
Run.
Over there.
Run,
there we
Jim,
go.
Run.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Josef from HappyTech. Big round of applause.
Woo!
Wow. Josef, we already ran out of time tremendously, but
doesn't matter.
Give us your 20-second pitch so that the whole world knows what HappyTech does and that this hand shook the hand of Tim Cook.
Oh, yeah, not this one. Oh,
wow.
No, it's this one. Well, just do your pitch.
We measure heart disorders using your iPhone. So we reduce diagnosis time and we help patients become happier and healthier. That's it.
Excellent pitch. Thank you very much.
That's how to do a pitch.
And one more.
Go, this, Jim, go. This, go,
just,
Jim, go.
I'm just making your job even harder. The question about education, I think, really struck a chord. That was asked by Jeroen Fransen. Where are you? Jeroen is over there. Are you happy with the answer? Just give me the mic to you.
Yes, I was happy with the answer, although it was a bit more about coding and a bit less about the rest of education. I was hoping for an answer more about improving education in general. I work in an educational startup, or I run an educational startup, Revisely. So.
Okay. Once more, that startup's name, it is?
Revisely.
Revisely.
Okay, thank you so much. That's it, Lauren. Thanks.
All right.